Welcome to Sitting Up SmackDown on CJLO 1690 AM. I'm Michael Brody. I'm joined by Shane Simmons. Usually this is the part of the show where I jump in with some funny thing that leads Shane to give me a credit of his so we can promote or hawk one of his products. But today it's my turn.
Oh, please do then.
I was recently accepted into a new collection of short stories. So I am again a paid published author. I will be appearing in a little book called Executive Dread, which will be published, I believe, in October, but that's by no means set in stone. And yeah, I sold them a short story this week, and I'm quite happy about it. And it looks like a great collection. So it's time to update my resume to say published author again, and not guy who wrote stuff in the past.
Or failed well, that was a quick trivia host. That was a quick acceptance, because I think you only just told me about that.
Yeah, it was. They took the story within 5 days of me sending it to them.
Well, that's not most publishers. Usually, they'll keep you lying around for a month or two or three before they bother to tell you. So,
I have had many, many experiences exactly of the like. But it's a good return. I've been doing a lot of writing lately, and it is nice to see that the very first piece I fully finished was immediately accepted by someone. I think that's a good sign.
Yeah,
Stephen King's publisher, I'm coming for you.
So I have several billion more words to catch up with him.
So that is my newest product to hawk, which I'll probably mention again when actual release dates are closer. Shane, why don't you mention a product to hawk just so we can feel even here?
The thing I'm working on right now, which I have to really get to because the deadline is a week away, but I'm writing another Sherlock Holmes stories for a new anthology that is about various Sherlock Holmes villains. And there was a couple of villains in one of the stories called The Disappearance of Lady Frances Carfax. And it always bugged me because they got away with it. So I'm writing the sequel to that story where they get theirs.
What I like about these billions of new Sherlock Holmes stories is that no stone is left unturned.
No. Well, you know, my stories do tend to follow closely with the canon. So there's a certain continuity, a parallel continuity going on in my stories. So they will ultimately be collected in one book. I'm actually getting pretty close to the collection level where I will probably publish in early 2023.
Because at that point, copyrights are expired.
Exactly. That's when the family copyright runs out on the last of the material. So you're beyond that point, January 1st, 2023, you were free of ever having to be bothered or molested by the Conan Doyle estate.
Lovely. Well, none of that has anything to do with our topic for today, which is mostly going to revolve around this weekend's new release, The Suicide Squad, the triumphant return to filmmaking by James Gunn that has been in the works for quite a while.
And the triumphant addition of one word to the title of the previous film that was a dumpster fire edited by monkeys.
Perfect. It is amazing that adding the word "the" to many franchises is the way that they drop a new installment. See, for instance, The Fast and the Furious, which is one of the films, or The Final Destination, which is one of the films later on down the line. Terrible.
Well, I can't wait for the sequel follow-up to one of the films we just talked about and see The Pig.
Exactly. I'm in for that. I will watch a million hours of Nicolas Cage detective chasing down leads to find his missing well-beloved pig.
I would prefer to call this particular film The Suicide Squad, because that previous Suicide Squad, that wasn't a real Suicide Squad. This is The Suicide Squad.
I love it. As James Gunn himself joked, he's going to do remakes of other movies now or reboots, and he's very much looking forward to making The Back to the Future. That's the one you need to see. You need to see The Back to the Future. All right. Well, you and I both enjoyed this movie this weekend, and I will start off by saying that The Suicide Squad is perhaps the best reviewed superhero movie of all time. I have yet to see a single review that doesn't praise this movie as essentially reinventing the wheel. So I always go into a movie which has that many positive reviews with a certain amount of trepidation, When something is this beloved in the mainstream, my alarms tend to go off. It turns out for good reason. This movie's not great. That's my bombshell. This movie's not great. It's okay. It's perfectly serviceable. We'll get into it in detail. I think we're going to get into massive spoilers at some point because I kind of want to. And again, this movie's not great. It's not a super impressive, wonderful movie that builds to a phenomenal climax. It's actually a series of pretty random scenes, very random character moments that all add up to me not caring a lot. And the difference between The Suicide Squad and all of the other James Gunn films, and I will argue this point, this movie has no heart. Every other film I had seen of his has had a tremendous amount of heart. Now, I will quantify this by saying this movie repeatedly tells you it has heart.
Yes.
Literally tells you that you're supposed to care about things. And then yes, does nothing to back that up. Go ahead, Shane.
There are some heart scenes that run a little hollow for me. So my capsule review of this is that it is a very entertaining, highly amusing disappointment. I was really hoping that the James Gunn of Super or the Belko experiment would show up for this film. And it's kind of just, yes, it's extremely violent. Yes, it's very profane. Yeah, it's rude and crude. But it doesn't quite, it still feels like a mainstream version of that.
There are an awful lot of set pieces in this movie. And by and large, I didn't care about any of them. They were well made, reasonably thought out. But almost every major set piece ends with one of the characters dying. And I almost never cared. Actually, I'm going to go ahead on the record and say I never cared about a single death in this movie. They all felt like obvious character arc 101 cinema writing. There are character deaths where a character yells out to the heavens, "I have completed my character arc," and then is killed. Like, I pointed at the screen and said, "And you're dead," and they died. In the instant they yelled, not since Alien 3 or Alien to the Power of 3 have I seen a sequence in which a character turns to another character and says, "I know I brought this up two acts ago, but my deep, dark secret that I mentioned in the first reel of the film is," and they lay it out in 10 seconds, and at that exact moment, an alien grabs them and murders them.
So, yeah, see, I am completely fulfilled. My life has meaning now. Goodbye.
Yeah, it's unreal. I'm not a fan of that kind of writing. And I want to mention that you brought this up earlier. The Belko experiment is a movie that James Gunn wrote. He did not direct it, and it is a murder fest movie. It is 90 minutes of briefly meeting people and watching them get obliterated one by one by one by one. And I cared about nearly every one of those utterly disposable characters more than I did people we hung out with for 2 hours and 21 minutes. By the way, that's the running time. This is no short film. I won't say, I'm crapping on this movie quite a bit. It's a good movie, period. It's good.
It's fun.
I will damn it with the faintest praise imaginable. It's good. And it really is. It's Citizen Kane
compared to the previous Suicide Squad movie.
Yes. Hilariously, it will probably do about one third of the box office the previous movie did.
Yeah, their release strategy for this film was bizarre because it was out for only a matter of a handful of days before it was streaming as well, which is a new model where they kind of decide, oh yeah, let's take this nearly $200 million film we made and throw it onto our streaming service, and hopefully things will even out by how many new subscribers this draws in.
Well, the argument seems to be that people will, even if it's available in their home, get up and go to a cinema to enjoy the big screen experience. Now, I'm going to, before the break, but probably into the after the break, I'm going to get into my most recent big screen experience, where I talk about the majesty and wonder of going to a cinema in this day and age. where you'll pay $13 to see a film you could have seen at home for free, or because you're already paying for a different streaming package. So earlier this week, I was given a pass to go see the movie Free Guy. It's weird how I have trouble pronouncing free. It's like the F doesn't work for me. Free Guy, the Ryan Reynolds movie, the very expensive, big budget Ryan Reynolds movie. I made a decision a little while ago not to go to the cinema, just in general. I don't want to be exposed to people in the, let's say, roller coaster of a pandemic that we're having of lots of people have stuff, nobody has stuff. Lots of it just seems to be changing day to day at this point.
Yeah, certainly you never know when you're going to walk into a theater and it'll turn out to be a tuberculosis ward.
Exactly. Or it's just the movie outbreak and that monkey's running around kissing everyone. So
it's a friendly monkey.
With a great deal of disinterest, I received a free ticket, press pass to go see Free Guy, and had decided to turn it down. And then I realized I had plans in the general vicinity that were ending at literally the moment the movie would start. So I decided, well, I'm going to be in front of the theater right as the movie is starting. So normally, if you're going to go see a preview screening of anything, you have to show up 30 to 40 minutes in advance minimum to secure your seat. I haven't been to the cinema in 18 months, so I decided to gamble on not showing up early just to see what would happen. So I get there at 3 minutes to start time. I have absolutely no trouble getting into the cinema. There's plenty of seats left. Now, this is keeping in mind the fact that it is at a half capacity. And because it's my first trip into a cinema with the new rules, I am immediately shown a diagram of seats in which I will have to pick my seat. I have to choose one. And almost all of the good seats were taken. And I had to pick one that was just a little to the right of where I wanted to be, let's say, a little further in the modern cinema experience than I would have liked, but it was tolerable. And what I saw looking at the list was the arrangements of the cinema is that everything is broken into pairs of seats that are together. So, couples can go and sit next to each other. And on either side of every pair is an empty seat. So if you're two people, you go to the cinema, you sit in a third row, and you will get your two seats together with a seat on either side of you. That seemed fine to me until I realized what was going to happen. Every single person who was in that cinema believed they were home alone sitting on their couch because they only had one person next to them. And that's a cliffhanger until we come back after these messages. Back to Cinema Smackdown on CJLO 1690 AM. I'm Michael Brody. I'm joined by Shane Simmons. And today we have a topic, and our topic is the new release, The Suicide Squad. But before the break, I was regaling you and the listeners with tales of actually going to the cinema.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, we left off, there were bodies stacked in a lobby and a burn pit out back.
That's most places I go these days.
Okay.
So, I did not go to the cinema to see Suicide Squad. I went to the cinema to see Free Guy, which I got a press pass for. Now, as I mentioned before, we were so rudely interrupted by commercials. I went to the cinema and all the seats were separated, meaning there were two seats together and then a space and then two more seats. And that was how the whole cinema was laid out in order to keep people from being too close to each other. What I did not realize at the time, as I sat down, was that when the movie began, everyone acted like they were at their own homes because they didn't have a person directly next to them to say, why are you still talking? Because the commercials, the ridiculous number of trailers began. People talked through every one of them, which I have no problem with as I don't care about trailers. But then the film began. And no one stopped talking. The movie was fully going with plot points and dialogue and things happening. and the entire cinema was talking.
Jesus.
With no exceptions, except I'm guessing me. The people directly behind me were talking. And in a normal circumstance, I would have gotten up and screamed at them. Made them very uncomfortable, threatened their lives, whatever it takes. But it felt totally pointless.
Have you no respect for this Ryan Reynolds film?
The point was the literal, it wasn't just the preamble or the credits or the musical montage. It was the movie was on and they were all talking. This continued for 12 entire minutes. I nearly left. It was beyond belief. And then it calmed down to some degree as people actually started to remember they were in a cinema watching something.
Yeah, I think people have started to forget. This is how you watch a movie in public with people.
Yeah, but it was never great. There was always someone in the cinema talking, without exception. It was the entire film. And that is not reasonable as far as I'm concerned. So I will just quickly mention something. So Free Guy isn't out yet, but I'm under no embargo not to talk about it. We began this episode by railing a little bit against The Suicide Squad, which, despite being kind of an okay movie, is worth picking apart. But I'm just going to quickly talk about my experience watching Free Guy, not related to my experience of being in that cinema. Free Guy is a very, very good movie with a bunch of garbage in it. And the question is, does the garbage to good ratio, which one outweighs the other? There are some wonderful ideas in this film. I didn't see a trailer, so I wasn't spoiled. I knew it had something to do with someone in a video game. But beyond that, it was completely new information to me. The rollout of plot points that lead you to what this film is about are kind of great. The character development is kind of great. And many of the ideas are original or just charming. The problem is the movie is a bit of a comedy. And so there's a lot of button jokes, meaning you get to the end of a scene and we have a joke. We're going to get out of this moment with kind of something funny. It's in a video game world. We can get away with great ideas. And they did it really well many times. Unfortunately, these buttons were never the last joke. So they would get to the end of a scene, have a perfect last idea, and then do three more jokes. And they did that so many times where you're screaming at the screen, but you were done. You've outlasted my interest in this moment again. That happened a lot in this film. And it includes some of the major plot point resolutions where I thought, what a great idea. Why are you still talking? And that happened again and again and again. Now, again, I'm not going to get into spoilers for real about that movie. I did really like it, but I really liked the version I saw in my head that was edited down from the version that exists. So I do recommend everyone see it. It's a gorgeous movie. It's really smart in places. And the simple concept of the world that they're in and how it works is more interesting to me personally. This is a personal comment. It is more interesting to me than The Matrix. The original good idea of The Matrix, hey, this is what The Matrix is about. I actually like Free Guy better. That is not to say that when the movies are both rolling their end credits, I think that Free Guy is better. I just prefer the general concept. And I can for damn sure tell you a sequel to Free Guy will be more entertaining than the sequels to The Matrix were.
Oh, well, that's a given.
That's a given. All right. So that's my Free Guy segue side comment piece about my experience, which was the worst experience I've ever had in the cinema, barring the time someone tried to murder me. That was the one of the worst. I'm not going to say the worst. One of the worst I've had, just in terms of people being awful and entitled.
So in other words, people stay home and continue watching your streaming services until you remember how to behave yourself in public.
I mean, they have scared me out of the cinema for the next few months for sure. So getting back to movies we watched at home, let's return to the magic of Suicide Squad, which I want to get into a bit more because it's good in places. And I want to talk about what's good about it. First of all, it's incredibly well cast.
Yeah.
The people in the movie are dead right. They're the perfect actors.
I can certainly say Jai Courtney has never been better.
I was a bit disappointed. I expected more from him. I would say that Pete Davidson has never been better.
That too.
And I would love to say that Nathan Fillion has never been better, but I didn't know he was in the movie until very recently.
Right.
Completely unaware he had a role in the film. And his role is stupid on a number of levels.
But,
conceptually, you know, stupid.
It's funny enough. I mean, they're all Z-grade villains for the most part. So It's let's make a Z-grade villain joke.
Well, I do want to point out that the central cast of Suicide Squad, which is the Idris Elba team, all the characters are great. They're super well cast. Everybody performs, not admirably, excellently. And there were moments in the film when I just kept thinking, I really like this group. And then I would also think, I wish I cared about the story they were in. That happened a lot. And again, this is a character dynamic issue. We are told about the things they want. Told. We are never allowed to experience those moments. Idris Elba, I mean, here's the thing no one is saying in the press releases and write-ups for this movie. James Gunn was brought in to do a Suicide Squad sequel, and one of the biggest assets they had from the original movie was they had Will Smith. He's a box office draw. So it was pretty much understood that his character would return. And I've heard James Gunn say, well, I found out early that I wasn't going to get Will Smith, so we decided to pivot and use a totally different character. Did you? Because that's the same character. He even has the same motivation. His thing is, I'm a hired assassin who's super good at it, and I have an issue with my daughter. That's the only things the Will Smith character had going in the first movie. They're identical. And it's beyond that. It's even, do I really need... People basically saying to him, do you really need to be a villain when you have all of this in your life? That's kind of also Idris Elba's journey in this. Do you need to be a villain if you've got a great daughter and all this potential and you could be a good guy and a leader? But exactly Will Smith's journey in the first film. So in my opinion, the script was fully written before they found out, yeah, Smith's not coming back. And rather than...
the story I heard is that they basically decided to make this a different, and I mean slightly different, character with the idea that, well, if Will Smith wants to come back for some future installment, he still owns that character, basically.
Right. Who is an identical clone of the character.
Yeah, although this is the film that also makes the joke where that character and Peacemaker have a moment of, wait a minute, your backstory is the same as mine. How is this a diverse group?
That was a great bit.
Yeah.
One of the only great bits. I keep saying the movie's bad. It is not a bad movie. It's just a bit paint by numbers. It's ABC. I will, since you brought up Peacemaker. Now, Peacemaker is played by John Cena, who, it was well known before this movie ever started, had a spinoff television show coming. And I mean, it's finished filming already. They're doing eight episodes. It's really expensive. James Gunn is already talking about season two. And so I went into this wondering, how could John Cena win me over? And he does not. he looks great in the film, and he does say interesting things, but he at no point established himself as a character I understood. He has no backstory. There's no information about him.
Right.
He's just annoying. That's it. That's all I have for you.
I don't know. I like the character a bit more than that in that, you know, he is very much this jingoistic ultra patriot. I will do the wrong thing for what I think is the right reason.
Which again is literally a line of dialogue in the movie and in no way ever shown. It's not really shown. Now, to be fair, we're going to get into spoilers here.
It kind of is.
The ending arc. You know, we're going to get into the spoilers, so, you know, either listen up or tune out. The ending arc is that Peacemaker says, well, I'm going to go through with this mission, even if terrible things happen to innocent people and my teammates. Fine, you said out loud at the beginning of the movie you were that guy. But there's nothing in between that scene and the ending that made me care about him or even remotely understand why. He's just like, I'm a dumb soldier. That's essentially his raison d'etre. Like, this is not a, it's just not enough for me. I don't feel like his character said quite enough. I'm going to do another sort of segue off to the side for a moment because we brought up John Cena. John Cena was in two major movies that were released recently. He's also in the new Fast and Furious film. He's the major antagonist in the new Fast and Furious movie called unbelievably, it's called F9. I mean, they've had some bad titles. You know, Fate of the Furious was kind of amazingly awful, but to just utterly give up, call your movie F9, and to which I kind of want to answer, yeah, F your nine. But anyways, the John Cena thing, John Cena's the antagonist in it. And I was watching, this movie at home recently because I saw it this week, just a few days ago. And I was texting with a friend of mine who also was watching it, who texted me, hey, John Cena's in this. And after a couple of scenes, I wrote back, yeah, that man has the most punchable face I've ever seen. And it really didn't change for me when I watched Suicide Squad. I'll remind the listeners you're tuned into CJLO 1690 AM. I'm Michael Brody. I'm joined by Shane Simmons. Our show is called Cinema Smackdown. And today we are delivering the Smackdown. As I speak of
a Smackdown of a film we kind of liked.
Yeah. As I deliver the line about John Cena having a very punchable face. I mean, there are some scenes in the movie where Vin Diesel. There we go. I would much prefer a Fast and Furious sequel starring Ving Rhames. Yeah. All right. That said, there are some scenes where they throw down, and that was what really led me to say, wow, I'm really enjoying watching John Cena get punched in the face. So what is it about this? All right, I'm going to do a very quick comment about F9. I don't even like saying it. So the Fast and the Furious, we could do a whole hour on it because there's way more than an hour to talk about with the Fast movies. But also, Shane, you've seen essentially none of them or none of them.
I saw the first one and so dismissed it as a crappy Point Break knockoff.
Yeah, absolutely. And you were right to do it. It's a poor film.
And I didn't see the second one. And then whatever cable service I was subscribed to at the time, I did watch the third one, which is Tokyo Drift, which is largely disconnected from the rest of the series.
Exactly. Yeah.
And have watched nothing else.
All right. Well, I watched Fast 1, hated it. I think I watched Fast 2 and hated it more and dropped out. Dropped out completely, ignored them for years. Finally came back when people were ranting and raving about Fast 5, which is essentially what I call a hand job. Anyway. So with that said, people were ranting and raving about Fast 5. So against my better judgment, I checked out Fast and Furious 5, which was an excellent film. Excellent on every conceivable level of entertainment, outrageous set pieces, real character development. It shocked me beyond belief that I was watching something good. It's still trash, but it was good trash. Anyway, watching Fast 5 made me go back and watch all the installments, none of which I liked up till Fast 5. Mm-hmm. And then I went forward in the series as they came out, and every film was kind of good. Some were better than others. Again, we could do a whole hour, but I just wanted to jump in on F9, the most recent and totally unnecessary installment. Now, most people consider Fast 5 to be the best film in the series. It might actually be F9. It was such a good movie on so many levels. Now, here's the thing. Sometime between Fast 5, which is a very good action movie, and Fast 9, they abandoned logic to such a degree in these films that they are out-marveling the Marvel films at this point. Meaning, these people are more indestructible and more invulnerable than the Avengers. And Fast 9 has superpowers in it. Now, people will balk or laugh when I say there's superpowers in it, because it's not like a person swings a magic hammer, but there's a magic device in this movie, and it is used in the way you would use a superpower in an X-Men film. And I loved it. I loved F9. I will do a whole hour on what's wrong with it, because there's plenty wrong with it. The leaps of logic are beyond belief. But if you want to see a satisfying Avengers film, watch F9. It is everything you would want. They aren't wearing masks, but then again, neither are the Avengers in the movies, except Captain America.
Right.
But these characters are rock solid superheroes in this movie, and their adventure was completely engaging. So anyway, as I said, I could go on and on and on, but I'm going to spare you. I will probably urge you at some point, Shane, to just bear down and make it through all 9 films.
Oh,
but
yeah, yeah.
Such well, a demand.
It's a plan of mine. At some point, I'm just going to sit down and do like one a day until I get through the whole series. And then we can talk about it at length. But I feel like this series is going to end any day, right? And then I'll have an end point to look forward to. But
apparently 10. No, apparently 10. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They're going to call it after that.
Well, when you see this movie, you say you could make 30 more of these.
Because they made a spin-off film as well, right?
Yes, and the spin-off film was excellent, but excellent garbage. Again, I don't want to oversell these. They're trash. They're dumb. But it's an action movie. The spin-off film is by one of the directors of John Wick, so it's not exactly bad. And it has a couple of moments where you say, "Well, that's really inspired and wonderful." I'd say there's only a couple of moments like that in the spinoff film, which is called Hobbs and Shaw, but F9, there are a lot more entertaining moments. And again, if you ever see these movies, we can pick them apart. They're well worth crapping on. But
hopefully they can bring it to a successful conclusion with the next one, and Vin Diesel can go back to making another 50 Riddick films.
No, pass. Pass hard. I at this point, I'd much rather see him be locked into a Fast and Furious contract than ever continue to dilute one good Riddick movie
with
multiple terrible sequels. That just it's not working.
I would be pleased to see any number of additional original films by David Tui than more Riddick
material. Exactly. I throw him at a franchise that he has no business working on, I'll be happier than a Riddick film. I really, really don't like those sequels at all.
So, Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
By David Tui. I'm in. No question. As long as he gets Jim Carrey to come back.
Right.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about Suicide Squad, because there's so much information about this film. So we've mentioned a little bit about Jai Courtney's performance, and a little bit about
career making performance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's worth mentioning things like problems I had with the film would be Viola Davis's performance as Amanda Waller. This is her second, third, or fourth DC Universe movie. I don't know how many she's done. And this is the movie in which she comes across the worst. Now, it's hard to say that given she's also in the original Suicide Squad movie, but her character is one note in this film. She actually does a better job of getting across, I'm a totally insane patriot who doesn't understand when you have to have flexibility in a mission way more than Peacemaker, because her reactions to things not going right are stupid. And there's a moment... Mm-hmm.
She is a monster in these films, to the point where, screw Darkseid or Steppenwolf or all those other dumb villains. She is by far the most villainous character in this DC cinematic universe.
I do have to agree, but she is such a moron in this movie, to the point where she gets a comeuppance and the audience is expected to cheer. And my reaction was, it wasn't enough. They should have caved her head in.
She's that was the next thing I was going to say. Yeah. If you go that far, you might as well go all the way and murder her, because
when she wakes up, she will certainly have you murdered.
Right.
That's her job. Her job is to kill people and black bag them, and it never happened. So, yeah, sorry. That whole arc didn't work for me, and it's a major part of the movie. I just thought she has nothing to do with this role. She just sits there being awful. It is a very one note. I didn't like that part at all. Again, James Gunn is better than this for the most part, his other work.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a bit of a complaint. I will complain a little bit. This is an odd complaint. I watched this movie, which feature is the third movie with Margot Robbie playing Harley Quinn.
Yeah. In fact, I did just prior to this catch up and watch Birds of Prey.
Which I advise you not to, but of course, you know better.
Well, we could
probably do a whole show about that episode. For
the sake of continuity, I needed to understand the line where she, you know, she gets asked why she's in prison again, and she says, "I got road rage in a bank." Because, you know, without that whole extra film, I would not have possibly understood how she was in Suicide Squad 2.
Well, here's my comment. Margot Robbie is probably better in this movie than she's been in the last two. But she doesn't have anything interesting to do at all. She feels like such a thrown in at the end for no reason character. I didn't care at all about her arc. And she vanishes from the movie for half hours at a time. Because again, it's 2 hours and 21 minutes. This movie, while I have no specific scene that needed to be cut, is 40 minutes too long.
It is. But I was reading that apparently there was a considerable additional Harley Quinn character arc that got cut from the film. Again, it's already way too long.
I only have the film I saw to go on, but she doesn't work for me in the movie. And she's
I would not be surprised to see a longer cut of this film come out at some point, because there's a few things that Peter Capaldi, for example, at one point, he suddenly is sporting a bandage on his ear, which is one of those continuity things of, okay, so there's a scene about that happening, right?
Nope.
Not in the film.
It's funny that you bring up Peter Capaldi, because he doesn't have an arc that makes any sense to me at all. He's a crazy scientist who likes dancing. Sure.
And there's a couple lines that suggest he might be a really big sexual pervert.
That one line about him saying, "I think my answer might be different than you think it will be," is probably the best line in the movie. Because it is that turnaround line where you go, well said. But the Capaldi appearance, I was very excited about, only to realize, well, you don't get to do anything in this film. He didn't get to do anything. And he is dragged around. He's ineffectual. And
I mean, he's done absolutely... Here's the thing. The film is populated, other than Viola Davis, it's populated by some villains who have done some pretty horrible things, and I don't feel like any of their comeuppances was hard enough.
Agreed. I would also say that the weirdest one is the Weasel character, who is right at the beginning of the movie.
Yep.
Firmly established as a murderer of children.
Yes, a multiple child murderer.
And at the end of the movie, he gets a happy ending with no sort of justification for that moment where we said, but you do, of course, remember we said he's killed 30 children.
Yeah, because there was a couple moments right at the top of the film in that whole opening sequence that made me think, oh, okay, James Gunn's on duty here, and this film is going to have some balls. And the balls kind of went away.
According to Gunn himself, this is the movie he was the least interrupted on. It is almost his exact vision.
And yet I think it feels watered down, strangely.
It's so watered down.
Especially for him.
Yep.
And he's gone pretty extreme in the past. But it's almost like... It's almost like pre-Heavenly Creatures Peter Jackson versus post.
Right.
Where he became a studio director.
It's odd. I feel like this is the movie that James Gunn thinks people wanted from him, rather than the movie he would have wanted to make, even though he's saying the exact opposite in all of his interviews. It feels so run of the middle, center of the road. You know, I'm going to do this joke or that joke. And you're like, yeah, because you've done them before. And there's some great moments in this that are also not super well realized. There's a moment in this movie that I was watching happen, and I said, this should be a really great scene, and I don't care, which is the movie does make use of that time out of time moments. So we'll see a sequence, and then it'll say 8 minutes earlier, and we'll see a whole sequence to get us back to that moment. So there is a moment where Peacemaker is about to kill someone and the film stops and we get an 8-minute prologue to him killing someone, which ends with a platform landing magically next to Peacemaker. And I thought, this is a great idea for me to really feel something right now. Why do I feel nothing? Just the magic aspect of a character appearing when they're needed. There's just something so fake about the entire 3 or so minutes leading up to that. It's just bad CGI. Yeah. And I don't know. I think it just has to do with photography. I was watching the sequence going, yeah, he just drops in at the perfect moment. I should be really into this. I don't care though. And then there's the, this again, huge spoilers. There's a gun battle in this moment where Peacemaker is going to kill somebody and someone else shows up and they fire guns. And it's not a great idea. I didn't like that at all. I saw that scene. And I said, oh, I guess that's the easiest way out of this sequence.
I mean, there is a line early in the film that sets it up, but it's still, it's not.
It's also delivered by the wrong character for it to have resonance.
Right.
Literally, if it had gone the other way, at least you would have said, prophecy fulfilled. Back to Cinema Smackdown on CJLO 1690 AM. I'm Michael Brody. I'm joined by Shane Simmons, and we have been ripping to pieces James Gunn's Suicide Squad movie.
The most beloved movie of the year.
Certainly the most well-reviewed superhero movie possibly of all time. And I didn't love it. I thought it was likable in places, but had so many problems that by the end of the film, I was annoyed with it rather than feeling good.
Well, I should confess to you, I've actually watched the film twice now.
As you should for any movie we talk about.
Well, yeah. It was one of those where it was disappointing enough for me that I have that experience where sometimes my first viewing of a film is coming to terms with what it is, what it isn't.
Yes.
And then the second viewing is appreciating it for what it is.
Yep. That is a completely smart thing to talk about when it comes to film in general. And people don't always know that. They don't realize that, hey, I went into this thinking it would be funny, but it's not funny, so I hate it. And then realizing later, oh, it's genius. Did your impression change?
Not really.
Because mine won't.
Yeah. No.
I feel pretty confident that my one-time viewing of this was satisfactory.
My particular disappointment was, if anything, reaffirmed in that the first Suicide Squad, one of the big problems for me is that it didn't lean hard enough into the element of, yeah, it's a superhero movie, but they're villains. And it's a team villain movie. And they're all awful, psychopathic mass murderers. And I thought, if anyone can lean into that, it'll be James Gunn. And he'll have fun with that they're just monstrous, awful people. And there's hardly any of that in this film.
Nope. I barely cared. Also,
they're all kind of, oh, we all have our little backstories of how, you know, like the worst one probably being Ratcatcher 2, who has a backstory that's almost fairy tale whimsical.
She is in no way a villain.
Her great crime is, well, I tried to rob a bank with some rats once.
Yeah. No, she is a fairy princess. She's essentially whatever the Disney princesses are. She is beloved, lovable. Everything in this film is about making sure she gets away unscathed. And the movie keeps telling you that, too.
And early on, and here's where I realized, oh, no, I thought this movie had testicles and it doesn't. There's a moment where they camp on a beach, they're camped on a beach or near the beach, and they kind of wake up in the middle of the night and realize that King Shark is about to eat her because he's hungry.
That scene was great, but and obviously by the end of the movie I didn't care anymore.
And they stop him and she threatens him with rats, and there's a fair amount of back and forth between the various characters, and then she's like, well, would you eat us if we're your friends? And he's like, well, I have no friends. And it's like, okay, well, how about we be friends and then we're cool, right? And they have a moment where it's like, she extends her hand and he takes it. And it's like, the James Gunn I knew would now have him eat her here and now.
Yeah, I absolutely flinched when she took his hand, expecting the killing blow to come, or at least the biting off of her arm.
Right.
Which would have been upsetting and correct.
Yeah, correct. Exactly. It's like, oh, here's the sweet character, and oh, the CGI Sylvester Stallone shark just maimed her horribly.
I did not realize that was Sylvester Stallone for half the movie. Didn't recognize his voice at all.
Well, considering most of his lines are maybe one word, that's understandable.
But then at some point I was like, oh yeah, that's Stallone.
I hope they paid him $20 million film. for that role.
Uh-huh.
That's got to be a big payday for him.
Again,
the thing he probably recorded in a single afternoon.
Well, I mean, how many millions of dollars has Vin Diesel made by saying I am Groot and then just having them put that through a sound filter? I was confused and disappointed that Taika Waititi appears in this film for no good reason other than, hey, he's sort of familiar.
Yeah.
He does nothing of consequence.
Yeah, I'm certainly off the tiki-taki waka waka. I can't say his name properly. I'm off his magical train. Probably because I saw Jojo Rabbit not so recently, and
you are the one critic in North America who's like, not good.
Yeah,
you're the one.
I thought it was genuinely a bad film and not for the reasons that some people dislike it. Oh, you're making light of that. No, I have no problem with them making light of Nazi Germany. The film has many, many other problems that I do not care for. But again, that's a whole other hour. We can do the smackdown on a completely different film.
I have my own issues with that movie that are very different than yours.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that we both kind of have a bad taste in our mouth regarding that movie. But for different reasons.
Yeah, well, it's ripe with material to not like.
I am not off the Taika Waititi train because he appears in Free Guy in a rather large role that does make sense, although he's very unlikable in the film. And that is intentional. I do think he could have brought a little more to the part, but it's fine. He's fine in that one. His role makes sense, whereas I don't like him in being in Suicide Squad. But I am not off the train. But
you didn't like him as a magical fairy tale heroin addict?
Yeah, exactly. Again, what is that? There's no character there. That is the strangest collection of details. My dad was the greatest dad that ever lived, except he could never stop doing heroin. Yeah. Why is that exactly?
Well, that whole sequence where we get that backstory is one of those, it's stretching to have heart. And it's like, I don't want this in the film. In fact, watching the film for a second time, we got to that sequence and I was like, oh, right, this, I'm so bored right now.
Yep. No, there was a lot of I'm bored on my first viewing. So second viewing, I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
And we keep crapping on it. It's still kind of a good movie.
still kind of enjoyed the hell out of it, but
it is better than a lot of things I've seen lately. Very enjoyable in places, but ultimately, is it a fully satisfying experience? Absolutely not. It
has a shark man tearing a guy in half,
which I found out was
how can I not like?
It was a practical effect,
exactly.
And the shark man wasn't practical, but the ripping a human in half part was practical effects. Yeah. And that it does look amazing. It has a lot of wonderful little bits. I liked Michael Rooker's character, sort of, although the movie opens with a scene of a man sitting in a box, a large box, bouncing a rubber ball. And then a bird comes in and you immediately go, is this the kind of movie where he will? And he immediately kills the bird with the rubber ball. And I thought, oh, killing cute animals always rubs me the wrong way, but maybe this will have a huge payoff.
But again, I thought that was one of the signs that, oh, this is going to have some intestinal fortitude as it moves.
Well, it certainly has intestinal fortitude as far as cute little yellow birds are concerned.
It is a very bird murdery film, I have to say.
But yeah, there's a lot missing from that. If you're going to start a movie by killing a cute animal and then basically have no balls for the rest of the film. I think that's an odd choice.
It's very pro rat, anti bird.
Yeah,
this film.
Well, you see, I would have been a bit upset had the beloved rat had suffered a similar fate. I would have. It would have bothered.
Yeah, me. Yeah. That, I agree.
There was too much. See that. You know what? I'm going to say it out loud. The character that has the most character development in the film is the rat. He really does. He has the best arc, which is mostly the weird Idris Elba arc, which is explained away in one line of dialogue. Why don't you like rats? Oh, my dad locked me in a cage with a bunch once. In a box. He locked me in a box with them once for 12 hours. What is that about? It's just basically, oh, a bad dad. Okay. And your character, I liked Idris Elba in this movie. I would watch more movies with that character, but give him something to do.
Mm-hmm.
He did not have a fulfilling character arc in this movie.
And again, for early material, it's like, I liked the, oh, your daughter's here to visit you scene in prison, where they just spend half the scene screaming profanities at each other.
Yeah.
I think, oh, that's probably the best prison visit scene I've ever seen.
Yep. And to be fair, the follow-up sequence in which they tell him, we've got your daughter on this super trumped up charge that we're going to railroad her over. He should have said, fine. And that would have been a much more interesting idea, because
he starts with that, but they escalate until he's like, okay, fine.
I would have left it at fine. Well, we all knew it was eating him alive. But having him show it, I was like, no. You lost me.
But again, it's like, are these villains or not?
And well, they aren't villains in the first film either.
Right, exactly. And I was really hoping that this time we would get to wallow in how awful they are.
Every single bad act in this movie is essentially justified again and again and again, because God forbid we don't like one of these people, which made me kind of not like all of them. But again, just to trumpet the movie, I really think he put together an exceptional ensemble cast who I would watch do it again.
Yeah.
You know, I really liked everybody. They're great in it. I just feel like this movie is such an ABC three-act structure. Meanwhile, it's probably a 7 acts, but because it goes on forever. And certainly the revealed menace at the end of the movie, I was not engaged by
it. I was
okay with that one chunk.
I appreciated, it'll tell you right in the trailer, but it does an interesting enough kaiju thing.
Oh, that's in the trailer. The hide it for 3/4 of the movie villain is in the trailer. Hollywood is stupid.
Yeah, that you mentioned, they do have the kaiju line in the trailer at one point.
Right.
So they tell you what's coming. And as kaiju threats go, I kind of did like this. But it is another one where one of the major human villains becomes a zombie minion of this thing, as does apparently many thousands of people. So it's one of those... Yeah, that was not a comeuppance for this guy either, because he just suffered the same fate as many innocent people.
Nope, it's a complete...
I need to see these villains killed much, much harder.
Yeah. Well, the entire threat in this movie of evil villains who are a militia or an army, a military army, did you ever care? They never establish it beyond, these guys are kind of awful. Sure.
Yeah, that particular character gets zombified. He has a mass bird murder scene, if you remember. And it's like, you don't have a scene where a character does something this awful and villainous without punishing him accordingly later in the film. And instead, he suffers a generic fate that many hundreds, if not thousands, of other characters do.
And you and I suffered a generic fate when we watched The Suicide Squad.
Well, there you go.
That's my summation of this experience.